15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
We have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, which serves Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. And I'm very pleased that so many of you do spread the word about our live broadcast, as well as our broadcasts, which are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by listening to the rebroadcast link on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Well, as you know, there's so much in the news, but really nothing about helping American workers restore their jobs. Today, up front, we have, joining me is Rich Loges, and we have a special guest, too, that knows Dr. Loges, and that is Dr. Walter Sue, and we're going to be talking with them in just a moment. But first, I want to give you a little sort of a backup of what's been happening in America since my last report about 2 months ago. As we start off today on this Wednesday, November the 13th, I want to offer this little information piece. Today, we have 315 million people living in the United States. 143 million of them have full and part-time jobs. Now, in order for any country to have a vibrant economy, you should have at least 55 to 58% of your people able to have a full and part-time job. Also, that means that we have around 183 million jobs needed, that's full and part-time jobs, but we only have 45% of what we really need, or 143 million people that are employed. That simply means we need another 40 million jobs to reach the 58% goal that we talk about so much. Now, healthcare in America has increased to the point that people just don't know what to do. With all the people unemployed, the government is focusing on ways to take on new ventures rather than finding ways to get 40 million jobs back here in the USA. Now, based upon that, I'm going to ask Rich Loges to start off today, and we're going to talk mainly about healthcare in America. Rich, how are you doing?
Michael, good morning. Guys, good morning to everyone, to our listeners. Before I let Dr. Sue take the stage here, I just want to do a brief intro. The doctor is a board advisor to an organization that I have followed closely for quite some time, the Physicians for a National Health Program. They recently commenced a very big meeting in the Boston area, which I'll ask Dr. Sue to talk about. The doctor is past president of the American Public Health Association, and many of our listeners may also recognize him from his former position as health commissioner in Philadelphia. Doctor, I wanted to ask, first off, thank you for being here. I'm confident that we're going to, Michael, clarify and simplify this issue today, in part, large part, to Dr. Sue. Doctor, the stage is yours. We want to hear your perspective on why a single-payer style healthcare system is the best, most efficient option for our country.
Well, Rick and Michael, thank you so much for inviting me to the radio station today. You know, the American healthcare system is insanely complicated and bureaucratic, and it's very difficult for most people to fully explain or comprehend. It's has so many moving parts to it. And unfortunately, if all those moving parts meant that we were very efficient and that it meant there was more productivity out of workers and so on, I think that we wouldn't complain too much. But the American healthcare system is uniquely expensive, covers too few people, and it hurts too many Americans. We spend as a nation twice what the rest of the world spends, and we leave 50 million people without health insurance, and then, you know, it's all this complexity. So the advantage, actually, that we do know about a program in America that has worked for 48 years, that's actually probably the most successful and arguably the most popular government-funded healthcare program in this country, and that's Medicare. Medicare basically is a universal program for anybody over age 65. And part of its popularity is because it does have a universal component to it and that it covers all senior citizens, most of who are out of the working years. And the idea, of course, would under a single-payer plan is simply, why don't we take Medicare and just expand it to everybody? I mean, we would obviously have to improve it and change it in some ways because we're going to start including kids and teenagers in the program. But the basic concept that everybody could be covered by a program like Medicare for All, I think, has some intuitive attractiveness. And it wouldn't be nearly as complicated to explain to people how the American healthcare system works because basically you could say, well, everybody in this country gets covered for their medical needs. So that's the basic concept of a single-payer plan.
That is very, very interesting. And wow, you are a great guest. You know, Doctor, as we talked about this issue over the last few months and before the enactment of the Affordable Care Act, I said to people, did any one of the national leaders consult with America's healthcare systems to see what they felt could be done to make healthcare more accessible and more affordable? What would you answer that question?
Well, there was a lot of discussion with the American healthcare systems. Now, the system itself has both the payer side and the delivery side. So the insurance companies certainly weighed in terms of how they felt the healthcare system should be reformed, and the doctors and hospitals also weighed in. And in many ways, the Obamacare Affordable Care Act is meant to be a compromise of all those different opinions. But the problem, frankly, is that everybody has sort of their own piece of the pie that they want out of the system. And if everyone gets pieces of the pie, it ends up being a very expensive system. And that's what we ended up having, is that we created a new healthcare system that I think doesn't really control the type of healthcare costs that we need to do. It doesn't simplify the system. In fact, in many ways, it makes it even more complicated. And that's, I think, one of the big problems with the Affordable Care Act, is that because it's so complicated, it's become almost impossible for any computer programmer to figure out how to write the program to make it really work, which is why you see that the website is crashed right from the beginning and why it's still having difficulty getting on, getting started. So we pay a huge price for this complexity, and the program could have been much simpler if you just taken Medicare, which already works in our country, and instead of changing the, you know, the programmer could have written, instead of 65, he could have written, you know, age 1 or 0 or something. Or he could have, you know, we could have done it in increments and said started at age 55 and just expanded it to age 55 and said our goal was to move it eventually to down to everybody. But,
you know,
that's not what we did.
As you're saying that, I was talking with people and we said, well, maybe they said, well, Medicare is so well known for the seniors. I said, well, why can't we call it Americare? And that's from the cradle to age 65. And then it's the same system, just you know that you're on the under 65 program and the Medicare would stay exactly as it is. It's a matter of what would you say, single payer versus insurance across state lines really benefits people?
Well, single payer, I mean, insurance across state lines is just one solution that some people have talked about. I'm not sure if it's that much of a solution, frankly. But single payer would really transform the healthcare system. So if you could imagine, in the same way that we live in the internet age and internet has transformed every aspect of our lives, you know, the mail system, the radio system, record, everything has been changed because of the internet. Well, in the same way, I think single payer would be like would be the transformation of our healthcare system. But instead of actually losing jobs, it would actually help create jobs in America, because right now a lot of people are sort of locked in their jobs just trying to get the health benefits. And they don't really strike out on their own because they're afraid of not having health insurance. Now imagine, if you will, you had Medicare for everybody, so now you're actually covered for your medical bills. And if you decide that you want to strike out on your own and be an artist or a musician or something that you've always wanted to pursue, you could do that, and you wouldn't have to worry that you had to take this job just for the health benefits.
Doctor,
so I think it's actually very good for entrepreneurship, if you will.
You know, I think what you have said so far today is light years ahead of what I've been hearing from Washington. I don't really think that they sat down and talked with people like yourself who have great ideas. They sort of wanted to keep this bureaucracy of a lot alive, where they could just continue to help friends. And I know the healthcare systems here in the Philadelphia area and the whole tri-state area are all riled up because nobody knows what's going on. In fact, doctor, I want you to know I direct a social service agency, so I really have access to a lot of people, and many of our older people do not understand that they are not affected. The over 65 crowd do not realize that they're not affected by the changes in Obamacare. They think that their Medicare is going to be changed around, that they have to sign up. It's almost unbelievable.
Well, that's true. No, you know, the Medicare people are actually the most protected class, if you will, in America. And the politicians are wise not to mess around with the Medicare program. So actually, the people who are Medicare shouldn't worry about that. But the people who are not in Medicare are seeing tremendous changes right now, and we're hearing about all these different changes. It could have been a lot simpler if we just simply, as I said earlier, expanded the Medicare program so that it would cover more of those people, and then the transition wouldn't seem so, you know, dramatic and gut-wrenching as it is right now.
Why would you say they wanted to keep all of these healthcare systems in place and add another, you know, level of bureaucracy to put on the table of the American people?
Well, I think, you know, it's very hard to change how people have been doing business for a long time. So they decided that they could maybe add this other bureaucracy and still keep all the other ones in process. But that doesn't really save us a lot of money. In fact, one could argue it actually adds more money to the healthcare system. And at a time when, in the global economy, we are already spending twice what the rest of the world spends on health care, one has to ask, how does that affect, you know, our economy? It means, frankly, that we have to borrow even more money, go greater into debt, in order to fund this additional bureaucracy. And I think most Americans didn't really think through what that might mean. So I know, for example, that one of your central themes is to try to get jobs for Americans. And one of the real problems over the last decade is that manufacturers have basically figured out that it's cheaper to move overseas and do their manufacturing base in another country than to have it in America. And they would say because of labor costs. Well, labor wages is one aspect, but one aspect that we really have some control of that's very expensive is how much we have to spend for health care. And our failure to actually control health care costs through something like a single payer or a Medicare for all system means that that American businesses have to spend twice as much for their health care benefits for each of their workers. So we are actually depriving Americans of the manufacturing base and all the subsequent benefits of that because our health care costs are so out of line from the rest of the world. And until we get serious about something radical like a single-payer system or Medicare for All system, which can control health care costs, we're not going to be able to bring back jobs in America.
You're absolutely right. In fact, this past week, as I spoke to a particular manufacturer, he said to me, well, we have two locations here in the U.S. and one abroad. But he said the way things are going and the way our regulations in America are going, I think that we're going to have to expand our overseas operation and downsize what we do in the USA because I don't have enough people. I don't have enough accountants and assistant office managers to keep up with all the regulations that are being placed on my business. Right. And every one of those regulations cost money. Doctor, I want to ask you if, yes, you were going to say something, Rich.
Michael, doctor, excuse me. Doctor, I wanted to mention a few things if you would, and again, thank you so much for being on today. One of the things that I kept laughing when I would hear the president say, which, by the way, I think the Affordable Care Act only makes the most obtuse and complex health care system in the industrialized world more complex and more obtuse, and I believe you'd concur with that. And, of course, for obtuseness and complexity, insurance companies pass that charge onto whom? Onto the consumers. So when I would hear the president say, if you like your insurance policy, you can keep it. And I got to thinking, like, you know, I don't know anyone who, you know, cuddles up with their health care plan at night and has a candle at dinner. What they really like is if they can have, generally speaking, access to the doctors they want, the facilities they want. They go in, maybe they pay a copay, they leave, they never get a bill, they never get a collections bill because they paid for their service that was rendered. Well, if insurance is going across state lines, there are a couple things that I think we need to put out there, and I would ask if you need to clarify or correct me, doctor, please feel free to, but all states have their own standards. So for insurance companies to go and sell across state lines, for example, I'm in Florida. So if Blue Cross Blue Shield Georgia or Texas or wherever wanted to sell to me, they're either going to keep their policies the same or, depending on some states, they're going to have to increase the coverages. Now, as someone who has a background in insurance, I know there are two rules of thumb about insurance. Number one, insurance companies don't make money by paying claims. Number two, if they have to increase coverages, that means that there is a greater probability of paying out claims. And when you have to increase coverages on a policy, you pay more not because of the guarantee of needing that added coverage, but because of the possibility of it. And I don't see how insurance companies competing across state lines is going to reduce our costs, reduce the chaotic administration, and make healthcare more accessible. I believe in this country that we have such a significant percentage of our population, including many members of our Congress, who still view access to medicine as driving a Ferrari. And as I point out to everyone who tells me, well, Rich, that's going to mean socialized medicine, which, doctor, I'm going to ask you to comment on that and how single-payer actually isn't. When those two tell me that medicine is socialized, I say, you're right, it's called Medicare. It already is. And you pay Medicare for as long as you work. If you're an employee, you pay half of the, I think it's 2.9% of your check. The employer pays the other half. If you're self-employed, you get screwed and tattooed as usual with health care because you pay the full 2.9. So can you please talk, doctor, about how single payer is not this sort of taboo term of socialized medicine? In fact, it still allows single patients rather to continue to see their doctors. It doesn't remove insurance companies because we need them still to administer claims. And insurance companies can still sell supplemental coverage on top of Medicare. Would you mind to talk about that, please?
Sure.
Sorry, I gave you a lot there. I didn't mean to throw it all on you.
Well, right now, for example, Medicare is a program that's available for senior citizens. But there is a very thriving private insurance business that complements Medicare. It's called Medigap Insurance. And they cover those things that Medicare doesn't cover. So in a national health insurance program, you could, in theory, have a defined benefits that are covered by the insurance plan, and those things that are not covered by the benefit by the insurance plan could be a marketplace for private insurance companies. And another country, for example, Canada, the private insurance companies cover things like private rooms for patients, ambulance services, crutches, few things that are not dental care, things that are not necessarily covered by their national health insurance plan. And we could imagine that something like that could be created here in America. And even though the insurance companies would have a more limited benefit package under that program, they seem to manage to do very well financially, and they're still very profitable. So I think that's something we could certainly consider doing, and a lot of people who work in the private insurance industry would hold on to their jobs and work in this in sort of the supplemental medical benefit programs.
And perhaps, Doctor, the selling insurance across state lines would be perhaps applicable in that context. As a full reformation, I am in full agreement with you. And you know, on our panel, Doctor, I promised to Dr. Sue we'd all be on our best behavior. Doctor, I think we're doing okay so far. But the second half of the show is coming up where the cursing and screaming usually happens. But the fact of the matter is I don't, in this issue of health care, I've seen many health officials say that the Affordable Care Act is worse than nothing. Hmm. And that's not exactly a ringing endorsement. What's quite ironic is that there are, to my count, approximately 55 members of Congress who have been eerily silent recently, probably because their party is of the same as the president. So now, again, I'm speculating as to why they're silent, but the fact of the matter is there are actually a number of single-payer advocates in our Congress, and they've been relatively quiet as of late. So this is a topic that I do believe is more and more coming to the forefront, and I hate to say this term that it's got to get worse before it gets better, because when it comes to health care, I think we've pretty much hit rock bottom already, and you can't fall off the floor. So we've only got up to go. I just don't know if the Affordable Care Act, though, is that reformation. I mean, the government, by its own admission, has had to delay so many of the standards. So we're just adding more obtuseness and complexity to what's already a complex system. And you've got a whole nation, I believe, walking around utterly confused. And if you come to our show, Doctor, on our radio show, we talk more clearly about health care than the Congress does. So
that's, you can be honest about it, which is good about, and you can talk about the truth that's happening out there, and you can share people's experiences. So that's all valuable.
You know, I mean, Doc, now that we're in this Pandora box, how would you recommend that we get out? And Rich is right. There are now 50 national Democratic legislators that are looking for this single-payer system. Very interesting. And I haven't seen that amount of people coming forward in a long time. And Rich, I think you saw it on a site and sent it to me, and I had it sent to me by other people, and they said, why did this not come up long before? And by the way, the people who wrote this particular act. I'm understanding that it was Mr. Manuel's brother, Dr. Manuel, who was one of the chief architects of the healthcare, Affordable Health Care Act. Yet it was not taken to the employers that we know of. It was not really visibly seen by the medical industry. Did they go to hospitals? Did they go to people who are paying the health care premiums? Did they go to the doctors themselves and say, would it be better if we went to a single payer system, or should we continue what we're doing right now? I don't have any records of that, and I can't turn to an internet site and say, these were the 20 people that were part of this national committee that brought about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, Dr. Zeke Emanuel was one of the authors. It's fair to say that many of the hospitals and pharmaceutical companies and doctors actually, through the AMA, met privately with the White House to talk about the Affordable Care Act before it was signed. And they made some compromises. You know, they said, this is what we want, and we're willing to not charge as much for this or that if you do that. So there were some things that the Affordable Care Act actually has given consumers that has made some improvements. But the overall complexity of the system was not simplified, which, unfortunately, all the savings that are being talked about are now being sort of poured back in to try to fix the system so that it works better. And in the end, it doesn't really save a whole lot of money for us as a nation, which is what we have to end up thinking about. How do we actually save more money in our healthcare system so that we can be more competitive in the global economy? That is only going to be achieved, I believe, if we had something like a single-payer system. But the single-payer idea, or national health insurance idea, was such an anathema to the politicians who are in control in Washington that they never even debated it. They never even invited people who held those views to come in and do a briefing to Congress and explain why this might be a better way to do it. So in some respects, I find it somewhat of an advantage because since we were never on the table in the first place, and as the Affordable Care Act, its complexity starts revealing itself, I think it's given more of the American people a chance to say there must be another way of doing this, because every other country seems to be able to control healthcare costs and cover all their residents, and yet our country seems to be spending so much more than everybody else and not covering all our residents.
You know, Doctor, you've worked in the Philadelphia area, so you know about the PACE and PACENET program.
Yeah.
Well, what's always very interesting is when you have a PACE card, which is supported by the Pennsylvania Lottery, you can go in and pay so much for your prescription. It's almost a form of Medicare with prescriptions going to the pharmacy for our older people. That's why the single-payer system could be really a very good option for us, and I think it would be good for all of those 50 Democrats who have now placed their names on the list that they would like to see something done in the single-payer system. And this could be an opportunity for all the Republicans to finally unite and get a bipartisan issue to come on the table. One of the things that really is concerning to me is through the PACE program, I learned that a person in Pennsylvania can pay so much for one needed piece of medical equipment or pills. When you go to another state, when they don't have the type of PACE system, they're paying double and triple the amount.
Right. Well, you know, that's one of the great things about the PACE program, because it helps cover the prescription drug costs for senior citizens in Pennsylvania. And our senior citizens are very lucky about that. And it's one of the benefits, actually, of the lottery system that we have in the Commonwealth.
Now, Doctor, we also in Pennsylvania are able to negotiate with the drug companies to bring the cost of those medicines down. Is that correct?
That's true. We can negotiate, although we have a limit to how much we do negotiate. We don't use our full purchasing power to our great advantage. And so to what extent we, the persons who really do a lot of negotiations for drug prices, surprisingly, is the VA system. The VA system, which has over 8 million veterans in the program, actually does negotiate pretty effectively for lower drug prices for their veterans.
So that's another issue. If they can do it for a PACE for the seniors in Pennsylvania and for the veterans, why can't they do it across the board for every American from cradle to the grave?
Well, that's a good question. And it's actually that power that is good for consumers, right? But it's also the power that the pharmaceutical industry fears greatly, because if government basically says this is how much we're willing to pay for your product, they don't have another option maybe to go to if we had a single-payer system. So you point out perhaps the double-edged sword of single-payer, because it has the power basically to really control healthcare costs, which is one of the reasons why most countries that are able to control healthcare costs adopt something like a single-payer system.
You know, Doc, I want to just mention this before I invite you to meet another one of our panel members, Larkin Connolly, who just joined us but was listening on the way in. One of the things that happened in the last 6 weeks is that as the Affordable Care Act was about to be introduced, several people contacted our agency wanting to sell us all sorts of new plans and explain plans to us. In fact, yesterday I even had a call from a payroll service who wanted me to become more involved with them. They could offer Blue Cross and Blue Shield or Aetna or whatever and take the money out of the paycheck of the person. It's all money related. It's nothing to do with the actual concern for the health of the person that we're trying to take care of.
That's a very good point. And right now, most employers are being bombarded with health insurance plans, as you point out, largely because the insurance companies are trying to get in before they have to change many of the rules starting January 1st under the Affordable Care Act, which many of those rules are things that insurance companies are not willing to do.
Doc, I want to ask you something. If we began a program to go after our national elected officials, do you feel we could turn this thing around, put a hold on it completely for a year or two or whatever until a brand new plan is put in effect?
That's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always the people, representatives will always listen to what the people want. But the problem is the second part of your point, which is, what is the new plan going to look like that will replace?
Well, I would be the person to start promoting the single payer system.
Yeah.
That would be the goal. Now, Doc, I want you to be introduced to Larkin Connolly, who is the president of SCORE Philadelphia, who would like to say a few words.
Sure.
Good morning, Michael. Please excuse my tardiness. I have a great excuse. The dog ate my homework. Aunt Rich, good morning to you. And, Doctor, I enjoyed listening to you on the way in.
Well, thank you, Larkin.
Very provocative. I have a question for you. Would you allow me to use the word anapatha? I mean, can I use that?
Anathema?
Yes. What a wonderful word that is. And, yeah. and that really does explain the situation we're in right now. You all talk about single-payer systems, and I think the single-payer system probably would work. But it frightens me when free enterprise is taken out of anything that we do. when there's no commerce involved at all, and it solely becomes a government project. So it would seem to me that there would be some way that we could sit down and figure out how insurance companies could be involved in administering a law that is very tightly controlled. I mean, heck, when I was young, and I think we still have them, we had utility commissions. And the electric company, which was a privately held company, had to go to the state and say, we want a rate increase. We need this, we need that. I just really cringe when I think of the federal government hiring 120,000 more people to administer health care to everybody in this country. It just makes no sense to me. And I think if you think that'll work, then you're going to love the post office, and you're going to like Social Security and everything else that the federal government has managed to completely screw up.
What would you answer to that, Doctor?
Well, we actually have some precedent to that. You remember after 9/11 that all the airport inspectors were from private firms, and actually they didn't do a good job, because that's part of the reason why the planes crashed into the World Trade Towers, and they were replaced with government federal employees who are now work for the TSA. And to be honest with you, they were paid more than the private screeners are. But since that time, we haven't had an accident or a hijacking or anything like that in our airport since 9/11. So frankly, I believe when we are faced with a true crisis or emergency, we can bring in government people. And there were thousands of TSA workers hired to fill all our airports. And I think they've done a great job.
And you know what, Larkin, I have a question. Why would it have to be only government? It could be the people involved in the private health care system administering the various health care programs.
All. That's exactly
that could
what.
Be a single payer. And as the doctor mentioned earlier, the Medigap program that is available for the Medicare people is something that all of the doctors, in other words, if you go to the hospital, you need a basic x-ray, you need your hand fix or whatever, you would be able to have it done through Medicare with no ifs, ands, or buts. But if you were going to the hospital and you wanted a private room and you wanted something special, you would have the Medigap program there to assist you. Is that a good way of putting it, Doc?
Yeah, that's a practical and realistic way of how you could look at Medigap, yes.
Well, I've never heard the story you just told about the TSA. That's a new one on me, and I thought I was pretty much up to speed on stuff like that. But, you know, I surrender to the success of the IRS, to the overwhelming success of our postal department, which now burns up about $1 billion a month, to Social Security, and everything else that the government in its infinite wisdom has completely screwed up.
And guys, Doctor and Larkin, good morning.
Good morning, Rich.
Appreciate you coming on. And again, this is all about ideas to the table. You know, I actually, guys, share, you know, Larkin, I share that concern with you. And of course, my answer always is, well, when the government can't, you know, do it right, just replace the government, right? So not that I'm an anarchist, but I do think, Doctor, and again, as I'm understanding what you're saying, insurance companies do not go away in a single payer. They're able to still offer a number of added benefits that would perhaps otherwise not be available or wouldn't be financially feasible in a single payer style system. Because one of the images that's frequently conjured up, and I'm going to ask Doctor, you talk about this, comment on it. One of the images frequently conjured up of a single payer system are these images of rat infested hospitals, untrained doctors, you know, these kinds of things, right? These kinds of images that are evoked from those who are just so adamantly against this type of system, which, by the way, I've said on air and will continue to say, I don't know, Doctor, if it's accurate to say that single payer is the perfect system. I do think it is probably the best and most efficient option we have. We in the United States could look around the world at what other countries do well, take the best of those attributes, make it better here? I mean, I know America is very adverse to going around to other parts of the world,
yeah.
But perhaps in this case, LOL, but perhaps in this case, we can use this for our healthcare. Would you talk about that as this idea of socialized medicine in a communist country, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I don't like the term socialized medicine, but because, you know, it was invented as a way of being sort of a pejorative term to describe the idea of having a national health insurance program. The truth is that we would marry the best parts of the American healthcare system, which is public financing and private delivery. And if we do those things, I think that it's actually a much more acceptable way of thinking about it. So the public financing part is basically through a single-payer Medicare for all type idea. The private delivery part is going to private doctors and hospitals who compete out there for your business and make you, and they have to improve and keep up with the quality of care that they provide, because the worst thing that can happen to a hospital or a doctor is to get a bad reputation as someone who's incompetent or not very good place to go. And that basically means that the public gets to vote for which is the best hospitals or doctors that they want to go to. And under, like, Medicare for All, you could pick any doctor or hospital. Under the current healthcare system, you are directed by your private insurance companies to which hospitals and doctors you can choose from, because there's a limited network of doctors and hospitals that they are willing to pay for. So, frankly, right now we are experiencing a much more bureaucratic system than what we could have under a single-payer plan.
I agree with that, Doctor. I truly do. But and let me ask a question, adjunct to what the explanation you just gave. Most world leaders, most people that are in the news get sick anywhere from London to Indonesia. When they get sick, they run to the United States for wellness. They come here for open heart surgery. They come here for any element of extended care they need to get well.
Yeah.
The quality of our service is number one in the world. It is expensive. I understand that, and that is essentially because of the free enterprise element of it to some degree. Does the quality of medicine go away in a single-payer system?
No. Not only does it not go away, in many ways I think it actually would be improved. The new advances for improving quality is to have health information technology work in a way in which you can sort of analyze and figure out what is the best way of doing things for a large population of people. And right now, the electronic medical record systems don't communicate with each other. Each of the hospital systems, you know, they have them, but they don't really talk to each other. They're trying to work on fixing that, I should say. But the point here is that under a single-payer plan, everyone adopts a uniform standard for their health information technology. And so many of the best studies that are coming out about new advances in clinical medicine are coming not from America, but in countries that actually have a uniform medical record system that they all can use. So many of these other countries are putting out some of the best research as to the best techniques and ways of improving healthcare. And I think we should adopt that part. And one of the keys is that they have a much more robust information management system than we do, and we could actually do that if we had a single-payer plan.
And I'm in a lot of hospitals in Philadelphia, and as I sit in the vestibule, in the hallway, somewhere in a public area of a hospital, the number of people that it takes to operate that hospital because of HIPAA and regulations like that. I mean, these hospitals are covered up with people, to me, non-essential medical, non-medical service providers that do nothing but railroad the cost of healthcare through the ceiling.
Right. Well, I can give you a story about that. You know, I gave a talk at Penn And there were some hospital executives in the front. And I asked them, you know, about billing. I said, how many people work at billing at the Penn Health System? And I was sort of shocked. He said, oh, maybe about 650 people. 650? You know how many salaries? That's millions and millions of dollars. And if you multiply Penn by Temple, by Jefferson, by Hahnemann, I mean, you're talking about huge sums of money that are being used just to push paper back and forth to separate, to justify eligibility for insurance companies. It's not unnecessary. That money should be either returned to the policyholders to reduce premiums or reduce taxes for Americans, or use it for something else like our schools or jobs or housing or something that we also need in our society. That's what we should be doing. And you can't do that under the current private insurance system.
And for all of the discussions that you and I have had, I am in support of a single-payer system as long as that system shows respect to the current economy that we have in this country, mm-hmm. that represents one-sixth of our GNP nationwide. And if we go in and start saying, okay, everybody just start signing up for Medicare, I mean, it's complete havoc. And this morning, what did they say this morning? Somebody said that Obama ought to just back up completely and say, stop this craziness. Everything is suspended. We're going to try to straighten this out in 6 months. And it was the overwhelming opinion of the panelists on this panel this morning that the genie's already out of the bottle.
Yeah.
And trying to stuff it back in the bottle might be a little on the tough side.
Nothing is impossible, though. After listening to you, Doctor, I'm really impressed, and I hope that you'll be able to join us from time to time, because many people stop me and ask me the questions that you answered without even realizing you're going to answer them. That was very interesting. And just what you said about the single-payer system, we already have that in place with Medicare. And those people are very satisfied. And yes, if you want an expanded plan, you then buy an additional Medigap program, and you're able to do whatever you want. So the Medigap people could be those working in Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Aetna and all the others. They could be helping people to get the Taj Mahal plan rather than the general plan. And
right.
Quite frankly, Doctor, knowing the American healthcare system, what percentage of the people were not covered by health care before this was introduced?
You mean how many people were without health insurance?
Wasn't it 86% had credible health insurance?
Yeah, something in that area. That's right.
So we disrupted our entire economy for 14% of our
We went completely wild. It's
who aren't even registering for insurance, by the way. Yeah. But.
And doctor, here's a very important point to the end of what you said about an apathy and the fact the discussion that I heard driving over here between you, Michael, and Rich is more provocative and profound discussion than I've heard ever about healthcare in the last 6 months. And doctor, you are the first medical technician that I have ever heard talk about healthcare. And I keep my ear pretty close to the railroad track. That's the problem with this whole plan, is that nobody asked the doctors. Nobody asked the clinicians. Nobody asked the insurance company. They just took Hillary Care and rewrote it and called it Obamacare and slapped 2,700 pages in front of the congressman and said, you know, if you don't vote for it, you have no element of patriotism.
You know, you're right. And, you know, working in social services, I see that the Medicare system is good for our older people. The over 65, no problem whatsoever. It's the people who have the families and the single people that are all in this Pandora box. And I think we have to open the Pandora box, let the Pandora out, and let's start again. And I think one of the things that our national leaders better get to is discussing the expansion of Medicare, maybe call it AmeriCare for the people from the cradle to age 65, but put everyone back on the sheet of music and start playing the same, because an orchestra sounds horrible when there's too many people out of tune. Doctor, you've been an enormous, enormous personality. Rich, what else would you like to ask our good guest?
Well, guys, thank you. And, you know, I've said this figure on air before. I think it warrants reiteration. We as a nation spend $2.7 trillion, according to the most recent estimates I've seen, on health care. To put that in perspective, that's more than our Social Security and military budgets combined. Further, our military budget is more than the next two dozen countries put together.
That's mind-boggling.
We don't need to. Right. Everyone is in agreement. I really think most reasonable people in America know that this is a system that has become unwieldy. And I've tended to always have the philosophy, I think, like Larkin, that and perhaps all of us on the panel, that the blending and the happy marriage of public and private sector is just the very best system that we can put in place for our health care. I've seen recent studies also, Doctor, to show that 75% of those who declare bankruptcy in part or fully due to medical expenses,
right,
75% were privately insured.
Yes. Yes. You know, Doctor, what made the health care system for the seniors so good is, no matter what happened, a senior had that A and B plan. No matter where they were, visiting a family in Florida or in Maine or whatever, they could depend on walking into a hospital and being taken care of.
Right.
That's exactly what we need to do for every man, woman, and child in America.
And in defense of those numbers that you gave, Rich, there are an awful lot of very wealthy doctors, very successful doctors from a monetary viewpoint. There are nurses out there making what doctors made 5 years ago.
You got it, Larkin.
There are hospitals that are very successfully making an awful lot of money. There's those 600 people in the billing department who have jobs and are working. I mean, the American health system is expensive for a reason. And that's my concern about turning our back on all of this. There are no insurance companies up there throwing up obscene profits. There are executives making a lot of money. And
well, that's where the profits are distributed amongst the hierarchy and things like that. Doc, I want to ask you this. When did healthcare in America go totally private? I know for many years it was nonprofit. When did that go private, and was it better under the nonprofit guidelines?
The entrepreneurial part of healthcare probably happened sometime in the late 60s early 70s, when many of the HMOs, which were originally prepaid healthcare plans that took care of workers and were largely nonprofit, became sort of more entrepreneurial, and they became much more of trying to make more money for themselves. So U.S. healthcare in our own area was one of the prototypes of that. Eventually was bought out by Aetna. But that program was a program that made Len Abramson a billionaire. So it's an amazing, he made a lot of money out of the program.
And that will happen in free enterprise. That really will.
Well, I'm not opposed to free enterprise, I should say. I believe if the playing field's level and everyone competes and gets to work hard, and those who work hardest get paid more, I'm happy about that. But the playing field's not level. I mean, you can't say that 50 million people without health insurance, on one hand, is one of the ways in which people, on the other hand, can make millions and millions of dollars. I just think that's, if we had, let's say, a single-payer plan, and one doctor wants to work 80 hours, another doctor only wants to work 20 hours, and the 80-hour doctor gets paid lots more money because of that, I'm all for that. That, I believe, is what free enterprise should be like. But I don't believe that the system should be rigged so that some people are simply denied coverage while other people make millions of dollars.
And doctor, in a single-payer system, in my opinion, the very best doctors, facilities, providers, et cetera, are going to be the busiest.
Right.
They're going to be the busiest, which means they're going to have to hire. They're going to have to train. And everyone else who's not as busy, well, they're going to need to either improve their craft or find another business.
Right.
That's called free market.
Yeah.
Doctor, I have a question. Would you be able to put on your schedule next Wednesday so that we could do part two of our healthcare initiative?
Well, I'll look.
Wait, doctor.
Because I would, I know that I'll receive.
I didn't disclose it. Sorry.
I only want to say because I know that I'm going to receive many questions from people regarding your enthusiasm for the single payer, and I could then direct them to contact their national elected officials and have them say, why can't we put the single payer system on the table and let's see what this is all about as opposed to the thing that's on the table right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's going to be a talk on the single-payer plan sometime next week, next Thursday, in Philadelphia. For those who are interested, it's November 21st, Thursday at 6:30 at the William Way Center, which is 1315 Spruce Street. And I can put something about it on our website, phillyhealth.org. For you to look at.
Excellent. In fact, we would spread that word around. And if you are available, I want to thank Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, for contacting you, doctor, and making you available on our broadcast today. You've been a wealth of knowledge. Unbelievable. You know, President Reagan once made a statement. He said, government is not the solution to the problem. Government is the problem. But in this case, government could regulate us out of a problem by making everything on the playing field. And that's what they did with Medicare, and that was back in, what, 1968 or something?
Yeah.
So, doctor, thank you ever so much. Rich, I want to thank our great guest, Dr. Sue, for coming on, and we're going to put some information about him on our internet site. You can be able to listen to your conversation here on our broadcast by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And I want to thank Rich Logis, Dr. Sue, Larkin Connolly, and all of you for listening today. Until we meet again next Wednesday at 11 or this Saturday at 11, I wish all of you the very best. Thanks much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, doctor.
You.